Hi, welcome to the NutGallery.com podcast. This is Jason James, and with me today is Browncoat, and we interview Lonnie Azell, the author of Daughter of the Sun and also co-host of the Dragon's Landing Inn podcast. Hope you enjoy. Welcome, Lonnie Azell, to the NutGallery.com.
Thank you guys very much. It's a thrill to be here.
Your book is titled Daughter of the Sun.
Correct.
And any ideas on how you developed the title or the book?
Wow, that's a big question. How much time do we have here?
Enough.
Okay, great. Actually, this was a long project for me. I'd written quite a few short stories and started a number of novels. And this is one that I started just writing with. I had a picture while I was reading Orson Scott Card's and I just had this picture came to mind when he was talking about the price of magic. And the picture was this woman who had just defeated some evil bad guys to save the children and was looking at herself in a reflection in a lake and realized that she had aged about 40 years. And that was all I knew about the story. And so I just started writing from there. I got about 70 pages into it, realized I had no clue what I was doing on this story. So I set it in the drawer for a while, came back about a year later and stumbled across it, and was intrigued by it. You know, there was enough there that still caught my interest. So I went back and redid it again, plotted it out, got about 200 pages into that outline, and decided that that really wasn't working. I guess it didn't have the soul to it. You know, it was more like a pulp adventure, and that wasn't really what I wanted to write at the time. And so I struggled for a long, probably 6 months, trying to find the story again. Went back, read a bunch of my writing books, you know, jumped online, read a bunch of show me what I was missing, and finally stumbled across a piece of software called Dramatica, which is an extremely complex beast, but I got one small piece out of it, which was enough to tell me what I'd been missing. And went back through, replotted it, and wrote it in the course of about a year, year and a half, something like that, off and on. Sent it out to publishers, and had a few small bites, but nothing real big. And to be honest, I've always been one of those people who loves doing stuff myself. And so I just said, hey, why not? Let's go ahead and do this, see what can happen, you know. And the rest, as they say, is becoming history.
Is this the first book, then, that you've gotten all the way through to completion? You say you've started a couple. Is this the first one that you've gotten all the way through and we're happy with?
Yes, it is. Yeah, like so many authors, I've got, or I had anyway, stacks of paper that was, you know, started stories or maps or just ideas. Now it's all on the computer, which is kind of handy unless your computer crashes. But
right.
So all the way to completion.
Were any of your characters based on real people, or did you create them all?
No, they were. I'm sure there's parts in there, but none of it was conscious. They were all created. Like I said, I had the idea for a plot, and I came up based on the situation with a character. Obviously, I knew the main character at that point, Elena, and figured out how she fit in the story, what kind of problems she would have, and then created other characters to kind of respond to those problems or to make those problems worse. And so I didn't really take, you know, a friend and put it here in this spot or anything.
A real quick question. Your character Raven, I was just curious. He is quite an interesting character. At times, you know, very, you know, you emphasize with him, and there's other times you're like, you know, that there's more of a mystery about him. No one inspired that? There weren't any other pieces of fiction about that? I guess I'm specifically curious about him. He caught my intrigue.
I think Raven is kind of my answer to all your traditional fantasy. You've got, you know, the big mysterious druid in the background running things. And I think he was influenced a lot by that. But at the same time, I wanted him to be slightly jovial, you know, kind of a more humorous sidekick at times, something to lighten the tension.
He almost seems like he's a mix of, I want to say, like, the Robin Hood slash Gandalf. Like, yes, I've got this power, but, I'm just going to play around with it a little bit.
Kind of, yes. I mean, you do get very close on that. He, like a lot of the druids, he is based more on actually the historical druid, where he's a protector of the land, and or at least that's what he was brought up to be. Now he's in, you know, conflict with what he sees really needs to be done. The druids, quote unquote, think needs to be done, but he's still having to play his part in order to keep up with them. But yeah, very much kind of a Gandalf character.
I was very impressed by your ability to bring locations to life. Any thoughts on your ability to do that?
You know, that it almost amazes me when I hear people say that, because one of the things that I ended up doing, I don't know if this was conscious or not, but a lot of times I'll read the traditional fantasy novels like Brooks or my mind's blanking here. But I read a lot of the traditional authors, and they spend pages on descriptions, and that always kind of annoyed me, to be honest. I was always more, you know, in line with the modern day thrillers as far as the feel I wanted to go for on this. And so I kind of intentionally left, I thought, a lot of that blank as far as the description of locations. And I've heard from several people how much, you know, that the locations brought it to mind or there that, and like I said, I kind of intentionally left that description out, so it really kind of amazes me how much of that came through. I don't know if that's just the response to the characters and the way they're feeling the environment, or if it's just the way the imagination plays on, you know, what you as a reader or listener, if you're listening to the podcast, are hearing.
Well, Jason, James, and I here, we're talking about it. And we actually we're talking about the locations itself, and I made the comment that they have a familiar yet unfamiliar feeling to them. Like, we don't know the location and the land specifically, but it almost feels like something we know, the kind of the classic feeling to it that we go, oh, okay, this is, you know, the X land, this is the magic land, or this is whatever. It kind of has that. Almost we kind of know it already feeling to it, and I think it might be just because of your characters. We go, oh, that character's from there, so this land must be that type of way. In case you can't tell, I ramble a little bit.
That's okay, so do I. I think you may, you know, I think you're onto something there, because I did, but one of the goals I had when I wrote it was I did want it to be familiar enough that people could go into it and feel at home. And so to do that, you know, I kind of went with a lot of the traditional medieval European feel to it. But I, in order to make it different and make it my own, I also went out to ancient Hebrew sites, you know, a lot of the biblical sites, and pulled the language and some of the ancient culture from there to kind of mix it up and give it its own unique feel. I hope that came across.
Is that where some of the names kind of came from?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Because they kind of jump out at you like, oh, okay.
Yeah, there's a couple that are a little hard to pronounce too, unfortunately.
Well, that happens.
During the writing, you kind of mentioned writer's block. Did you hit any major snags in writing this, and how did you overcome them?
Well, I did hit those couple major ones that I mentioned, where I just got to a point in the story where I was not happy with it. Either I didn't have a clue how to go from there and come up with the ending I wanted to, or it just didn't have enough depth and emotion to it. And basically, the key I found there was just plotting. You know, plotting it until you've got a plot that works right. That's a dreaded O word, you know, the big outline. I went through several variations of that. And the one I ended up with, my goodness, it was 24,000 words, I believe, for the outline of what happened in that book, and it still changed when I wrote it, but it gave me enough impetus to keep going and, you know, enough forward motion to push through, and then the subconscious would kind of kick in new ideas, and we'd kind of go back and revise it a little bit more.
I've heard you mention before that the outline was a big part of the process. Is that correct?
Yes, very much, and I think as much as all of us hate that word, and think of it as a bad thing. I think it's really a necessary thing for an author. And what I've found to be true is that it allows you to get the initial ideas out on paper. And you know how when you've got something in the back of your mind, it just kind of sits there until you let it off, you know, whether it's a conflict with your girlfriend or wife or whatever. You just kind of got to get off your chest, you know, before you can kind of move on to anything fresh. Okay. It works kind of like that, I think. You know, it gets it out there, out of your mind, so your mind's free to work on other aspects of it.
You mentioned you did some research with the Hebrew and everything else like that. Was there any other type of research you went into in this book?
Hebrew was the big one. There was there's something out there today called quantum touch, which is kind of what Raven's magical power is based off of. And quantum touch basically uses, and this is a real thing that's being practiced today. It basically has the healer, if you want to call it that, cause their energy to flow in certain ways that it sets up an energy field around the recipient and makes it so that their body can heal itself faster. And there's some amazing stuff I've read of being done. It's supposed to be really easy to learn. I don't know. I've got a book on it.
Spirit
haven't really
healers.
Played with
it. Yeah, I think I've heard about that. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's really neat. I did see a video of a guy on stage as he was demonstrating at one of the conferences where within about 15 minutes he had taken somebody with a severely crooked spine and straightened the spine out just with a real light touch and, you know, moving the energy. It was really pretty neat.
Crazy.
Based off of that.
I've known that you've made some mention of possibility of an animation off of the book. Can you give us any insight on that?
We are working on that. Right now there's 6 or 7 of us. Unfortunately, about half of them are finishing up their senior year in college. And so right now they are working on their senior animation, which means, you know, they don't have much time for anything else. But we do have Anna Hibsier, I think is how you pronounce her last name. She's over in Germany. And she's done some great character sketches, which are up on the forums. You can see 2 or 3 of them. Unfortunately, the last couple of months, she's been hit with a lot of her own deadlines. We are all freelance right now. So, of course, we can't say, you need to get this done faster, you know. But we are making forward motion. The script's pretty much done. Character sketches are getting very close. Several of the locations are getting tied up to being close to start modeling off of. So hopefully within the next couple of months after school's out, things will pick up and it'll be full steam ahead again.
All right. This book is available as a patio book. Were you leery about going in this direction? And what has been your experience with this form of media?
Okay, well, let me tackle that first one first. was I leery about going with it? A little bit. Like I said, I decided to self-publish just because I like doing stuff. I like being in there. And it, you know, turns out that mainstream publishing really doesn't do a whole lot of promotion or anything like that for a first-time author anyway. And so if I knew I was going to have to do it all myself, so I was like, how can I get my name out there? You know, that's what I was thinking about with a patio book. With the first book, it's not necessarily about selling 10,000 copies or anything. It's about just getting my name out there. And I had watched T. Morris and Scott Sigler and J.C. Hutchins and several others have really good success. Decided this would be fun. You know, I come from podcasting anyway. I've been doing Dragon's Landing, which is a role-playing podcast, for about 2 years now. And it just seemed a natural extension. And since I wasn't gearing this first book to make lots of money, self-publishing, you know, it just seemed like the right thing to do. And it has been a blast. I've met a lot of really neat people. And it's just great to be able to get your work out there and to actually get a response from it other than a publisher saying a standard form letter, you know, no thanks, you're not right for what we're looking at for this time, you know.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned self-publishing. What brought about that decision? That, I mean, did you try submitting it to the big publishers? And what kind of brought about that decision and kind of got you out there?
I had done some submitting. I submitted to, I don't know, a dozen agents and half a dozen publishers. And even when I was waiting back for responses, that they deal with. When you're used to the internet age, the time frame is amazing how long it takes to get even a response back from one of the major publishers.
Yeah.
I mean, Tor was over a year to get a response back.
Wow.
Yeah, crazy. I mean, it's incredible. And that's just to send it out. And while you're doing that, you can't send it to anybody else. You know, you can send a query letter, and once they say, hey, we'd like to see more, then you're stuck with them until they get back to you with a yes or no. And so just being able to get in there and move forward, I think, was a big part of why I jumped into it.
Wow. Okay. Yes, I didn't know it was quite that terrible. Jeez.
It depends on the size of the publishing house, but the really big ones, the ones that you really think of, you know, when you think of a certain genre, they are so swamped with getting manuscripts in there
that it
takes them a long time to get through it.
So what's been the best thing that's happened so far surrounding the book?
One of the best things I would have to say is just the feedback from listeners. You know, getting just the random email saying, hey, I'm really enjoying your story. That means a lot to an author who's just trying to get started. And for me, but for any author, especially the people on podiobooks.com, a lot of them aren't published in the traditional route. And so, you know, you don't have a publisher saying, here's $5,000 to say that, yes, we think you're good. You know, you're doing this for the fun of it and for the love of it. And so to get that response back has got to be the best thing about it.
Very cool. What kind of feeling do you get when an author such as, on the front cover here, Michael Stockpole, reviews your work?
That was amazing. I'd sent out emails to 5 or 6 different authors trying to see if anybody would be open to that. And I knew it was going to be difficult since, you know, I was self-published or I was afraid it was going to be difficult, let's say, put it that way. Now, I had kind of knew Michael through the RPG podcasting group that we were in. And, you know, I'd never actually met him at that point. He was the guy running all I knew him, read a few of his books. Thought he was a fantastic author. I was like, well, hey, I've got his email. Let's drop him a line. And he read what I had up online and sent me an email back saying, yeah, I'd love to do it. And went from there. And that just floored me. You know, to get nice words like that from somebody who's been, what, 38 different novels now?
Yeah, it's crazy. I like that.
Yeah, including the Star Trek stuff. That was awesome. That was absolutely awesome. I can't thank him enough for that.
When did you begin reading fantasy novels?
I have been reading fantasy novels probably since I was old enough to read them. I do remember a large portion of my childhood is kind of lost to the vagueness of memories, but I do remember when my parents got divorced is when I really, really got into reading. I was probably 12 or 13 in that area, and I started and Stephen R. Donaldson and Terry Brooks were the three big ones I remember from that time. And, you know, it took me away to a different place, I guess, looking back at it. And it was so awesome to read these stories of adventure and stuff that we would never do. And I think that's one of the reasons why I decided to start writing, actually, was because of the fun that they had given me when I was younger and could really need it.
You obviously enjoy the writing there. Has that always been the case? And when do you think you really, really started into the writing?
I have always enjoyed writing. I remember I had a twisted little story about this old lady and her cats that ended up killing her.
Well, of course.
Back in high school, you know, back in my Stephen King phase. and I had a couple English teachers that really helped out in the love of such a passion about it that it came through to me. So I've always written a little bit, but when it came down to write the novel itself, I had basically gone through a time, wasn't making, you know, a lot of money, was struggling to get by pretty much daily like so many of us are, and I wanted to make a switch out of the career I was in. And so I looked at all my hobbies, which I've always had way too many of.
I agree there.
We know what you're talking about.
So I went through, like, you know, computer programming. Spent like 6 months doing computer programming, 6 months following, you know, the couple of the other different hobbies I had, where I was focusing pretty much on those and researching the careers and practicing the skills, trying to find something that I could enjoy, all the aspects of it. And writing is the one I found. You know, computer programming, I loved it. But when you look at the companies and the careers that you would get, the hours are nuts. I don't know if you guys have ever seen that.
Yes.
But, you know, you're working on office software or whatever, and it gets within 6 months of crunch time, and it becomes crunch time. You know, you're there 12, 15, 20 hours a day. A lot of times you hear stories of people sleeping in there, and that's not what I was wanting. You know, I had two newborn sons at the time, and that definitely wasn't going to fit into my schedule.
Does anybody else in your family write?
My dad does some. He has written for a paper a little bit, and he's got a novel tucked back in a closet that he is currently in the act of revising, I think. We've both been big writers and readers in that respect.
Well, that's cool.
You mentioned your role-playing. Do you think that role-playing has made you a better writer, or did role-playing make you – or did – ah, he wrote this one here. Do you think role-playing made you a better writer?
Yes, in some ways I think it helped, because as you're running a game – because I've done both playing and – and as you're running a game, you get a feel for timing. And you get a feel for what interests your players. And so if nothing else, you know, when I was writing, I was still kind of in that groove and feeling, I guess I had a picture in my mind of how they would be reacting as I was writing, if it was a game. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So, I think it definitely did. It also gives you a broader experience, I guess, of, you know, possibilities for stuff that can happen in literature, how things can play out. Keeps your mind active.
So, I guess kind of the final question here.
Two more here.
Okay. My final question would be any future projects in the works?
I am currently working on book two. It's not going nearly as fast as I would love done, but I've got so much other stuff going on right now. Between the two podcasts, of course, and daytime job, I do freelance web design on the side, and I've got another kind of quote-unquote secret project that we're working on that should be done in the next 4 months, hopefully. It's a big one. And then trying to write and, you know, have family time and stuff like that. So I'm not nearly as far along as I would like to be on that. But, of course, the movie, that'll be probably 6-7 years down the road before it's finalized, unless we can come up with financing and actually form a studio, which I do want to look into once we get far enough along.
Very nice. How soon do you think we can expect book two?
I'm hoping to have it out in print by the Christmas season.
Oh, hey.
That's my goal.
There you go. We got right on the cover here, you know, book one of The Sundered Breath. We got book two coming. How long do you plan this series going? Are you just kind of leaving it open, or is it going to be a trilogy? What's your plan for the series?
Currently, it's planned as a trilogy, and the way the world is built, there's the possibility for more books after that, especially in some of the lands that happened or that broke off from the mainland during what is called the Sundering, which you kind of referenced there on the cover. And those aren't going to be explored hardly at all in this trilogy. Books two and three may touch on them, but they're pretty much, you know, just there for ancient history. I do have a story. I would like to go back and tell Johan's story from before it all happened, him during the rebellion and everything that went on during that, and maybe even a novella or short story about the Sundering itself and the forming of the Temple of the Sun.
Almost go back and do like a Silmarillion approach.
But I'm hoping it'll be much more readable.
That would be good. Well, I think we're going to pause real quick here to run the promo for your podcast for Daughter of the Sun.
Okay, great.
Come back for the rapid fire.
In a broken world where magic has been outlawed, one family rules it all.
He did this! He killed my baby!
One woman cursed with magic.
What have I done?
Becomes the pawn in a game of thrones that will tear the world apart.
Who is the woman you're so urgent to find?
Her mother.
You will kill her.
Of course, ma'am.
Do you think he knows?
When we find the woman, she will destroy him for us.
When her daughter is stolen, she wants only one thing: to get her back. But that all changes when she finds her.
What have they done to you?
Join me. Together we can stop the Overlord. The children will go free.
Never!
Daughter of the Sun, the epic fantasy novel by Lana Eisel. Find out more about the novel, the author, and the podcast at LonnieEisel.com.
All right, we're back with Lonnie Eisel, and we're going to do our segment that's called Rapid Fire. We got five questions for you, and you just give your gut answer to it.
Okay, so this is the part where you've got me tied down to a chair with a big spotlight, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm the angry guy, you know, with the bucket of water and some electroshocks.
Okay, you stand over in that corner.
Current or last book you have read?
The last book I read was a Clive Cussler novel. I cannot think of the name of it, though. One of the Dirk Pitt series.
Oh, very nice.
If you were allowed to read one more book that you have not yet read, what would it be?
I want to read the next Holly Lyle book, Hawkspar. It's not out yet, and I wish they would hurry up with that. I really, really do.
Name an influential person in your life.
My dad was a huge one. But other than that, I'm going to have to say, as my mind's going blank, not Mark Victor Hansen, but Jack Canfield of the Chicken Soup for the Soul people. He wrote a book, Secrets of Success, and that has been very influential to my life this last year or so.
Cool. One person you would like to meet?
I would love to meet Sandra Bullock. She's one of those few actors or actresses that you actually hear good stuff about in the news.
Who wouldn't want to meet Sandra Bullock?
Well, yeah, there is that too.
If you had unlimited power to change one thing in the world, what would it be?
Wow.
I know, he gets crazy with these, doesn't he?
I wish that if I could change one thing, it would be that we would all have much more positive thoughts and dreams and actually go for it.
That's cool. Well, that's your rapid fire. You survived it.
It's not that bad.
Good. Yeah, the electroshock didn't hurt that bad. Good. Yeah.
I guess really the floor is yours.
You want to plug anything or, you know, get some ranting out of your system?
The biggest thing, and you hear this in my podcast every week, it's the way I sign off. It's always never stop chasing your dreams. And when I was writing this book, I told you about that whole period where I was going through trying the different careers that I thought might be fun and interesting. And that's when it really started hitting me that if we don't have something to work towards in our life, something that we have a passion towards, that we really don't have reason. I mean, I don't want that to sound too harsh, but it's only by doing that that we can actually make an impact on the world or even the smaller world and just those around us. You know, I have a positive influence on anyone. And so I think and I believe if you take whatever it is you're passionate about, whether that's playing video games or whatever, and do it to the best of your ability and help other people with that, I think this world is definitely going to be a better place all around.
That's very nice.
Very nice indeed. Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you, Lonnie. It was certainly it was a lot more fun than I was expecting it to be.
Well, good. I have enjoyed it. Thank you guys very much.
Yeah, and we're all waiting in anticipation of the next book.
Write faster.
I'm working on it. I am working on it.
Use that 2 weeks you've saved a vacation to write. Not just kidding.
Wait.
Actually, I'm really considering once a week just not sleeping that night, you know, and just writing then. I'm thinking that may be the answer.
Well, that could explain some of the stranger characters we'll experience.
Shh, all right. Don't tell anyone.
Well, thanks for joining us, and I hope everything goes well with you in the near future and far future.
Thank you very much. Hope you guys have great success with this podcast.
All right. Thank you.
You bet.